The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
How are you?
I'm warming up.
Yeah, well, barely.
Just barely, but we're getting there.
It's really weird. We get like 3 days of just brutal weather, then it like shoots up into the 30s, then it goes back down to brutal weather.
I saw this on one of these science channels. They have a very particular name for that. Cleveland.
I'm not sure we're the only ones, but I guess it's true. It's been a really hot, even my northern breed dogs don't like this.
No, I think a lot of dogs are having trouble with this, and they're waiting for summer just as much as we are.
Well, not summer. They don't like it hot, but boy, they don't. I mean, they'll go outside, but I can't walk them in this. Plus, they put all that horrible stuff in the streets. Nobody shovels sidewalks.
No, nobody shovels the sidewalks anymore, and in some cases, they're not even doing the streets. So
there is that. Well, I think it's time to give our listeners a round of applause, yes?
Yes.
Okay, let's do that. And a hearty thank you for your support during Radiothon 2015. We aren't certain yet, but it looks like the station made its goal.
That's fantastic.
Yes, it is, and all of our listeners were an important part of that. We are also just 2 weeks away from NABS 2015.
Isn't that the start of spring?
Yes, it is. Well, that it is March 1st that week. March 1st, I think, is on Sunday, and NABS begins on Friday the 6th. This year, the Handmade Show comes to Louisville, Kentucky.
Well, that seems like a pretty popular place.
Man, a lot of stuff is happening in Louisville. I mean, last year, it was the World Cyclocross Championships, which were fabulous, unlike some of the stuff that happened in Austin this year, but we won't go there.
Not Austin's fault.
Not altogether. And remember that the big mega cavern underground mountain bike park opened.
We'd love to have one of those here. It's the same temperature all year round.
Well, but what we have under the lake is salt. Okay.
All right.
Right? Okay. Did you know, though, that the mayor of Louisville, Greg Fisher, is not only a proponent of bicycling, he puts on a ride?
That's a dedicated mayor.
Yes, he is. And he leads two mayor's rides a year.
And I assume he rides in them also.
He does. He puts his pedals where his mouth is. This evening, Mayor Fisher is going to be on the show to talk about cycling in Louisville and what he thinks about all the bicycle-related things that are going on in Louisville. And maybe we'll ask him a little bit about bourbon.
Yes. I'm sorry. Did I wait too long?
Maybe. As we continue to ramp up to NABS, though, we also are going to talk with a couple of the frame builders who will be exhibiting at the show. We'll have one this week and one again next week. And they will also be panelists at a roundtable discussion I'm going to be moderating on Friday morning, March 6th at the Louisville Convention Center before the show opens.
So I have a question.
All right.
You don't seem to mind the talking thing. You're pretty good at it.
Okay. Well, some people... Okay, never mind. We won't
right.
go there.
But how different is it to moderate a panel as opposed to just simply doing an interview like we do on the show here?
Well, one of the differences is that we have a live audience and you're going to have the question and response thing going from five different people. And that audience at the end will be able to ask questions of the panelists too. All the panelists are going to be asked the same questions. Now, I've seen other panels like this where the one says, no, I want so-and-so to answer that question. But as we do here at the station, when we interview one of these guests, they have their questions ahead of time. Even if we get off onto a different topic, we have sort of an idea of where we're going when we talk with somebody. So the panelists will have that. We do have a finite amount of time. It's only going to be an hour, although I made it so that we could run over as much as 15 minutes. But don't tell anybody, because these guys want to be back on the show floor when the show opens at 10 a.m. So that panel starts at 8:45 on Friday morning. You know, I love this kind of stuff.
I think the insight that you get from a panel like that is great. And it's one of those that with five different people there, the just the way that everybody's mind is headed in one direction, it's amazing some of the things that you can come up with.
Oh, and I didn't even say who the five people are, right?
Who are they?
Okay, so Tim from Shamrock Cycles. We have Steve from Steve Potts Cycles. We have Kent from Erickson Cycles. We have Don Walker, oh, of course. And we have Rody Walter, who is also our guest this evening, from Groovy Cycles in Wooster, Ohio. What's really cool about Rody is he's just so passionate, not only for his work, but for the whole industry, for the sport, for his fellow builders. He's one of the hardest working guys I know. He has a wicked sense of humor, and he's going to be fun to talk with this evening. He'll be with us in the second half of the show. We also have news. In fact, we have quite a bit of news this week. So I think what we're going to do is head on down to where I hope it's going to be spring in 2 weeks, down to Louisville. And let's talk with Mayor Greg Fisher, the mayor of Louisville, Kentucky. Mayor Fisher, thanks for joining us on the show this evening.
Oh, I love it. How's the things going?
It's cold.
Yeah, it's cold here. Probably not. You know, we'll get down to like minus 20 tonight or something with wind chill, which is just like unheard of.
Well, I'm hoping when I'm there in 2 weeks for the Handmade Show, we get a little warmer weather. Do you think you can arrange that for us?
Yes.
Okay.
It'll be sunny and 55.
Oh, my goodness. From your mouth to whoever the weather god's ears are. So I guess we should talk about the most important thing going on in Louisville right now, and that would be bourbon.
Well, bourbon is hot. You know, we even started a word or created a word called bourbonism. Bourbonism is the act of visiting Kentucky to enjoy bourbon and our great local food scene here. Your listeners should know that 95% of the world's bourbon comes from Kentucky and the other 5% is counterfeit, so stay away from that.
It's interesting you say that because I think that is absolutely true, that if it isn't from Kentucky, it really isn't bourbon, it's something else.
Well, that's the way we look at it for sure.
Do you have a favorite bourbon?
I love all bourbon.
Now, did you have to say that to be politically correct?
I'm looking right now at my bookcase in my office right now. When I was mayor for a month, a distillery came by and gave me a bottle of like their great bourbon. And then before I know it, like I've got like 25, at least 25 bourbons over there. And we have something called the Urban Bourbon Trail in Louisville, which is all the bars that carry more than, I think it's 80 bottles of different bourbon. So I'm an unofficial stop on the Urban Bourbon Trail now. None of them are open, though. I want you to be sure that you know that. It's for.
That's okay. You don't. I wouldn't share it either. It's really about sharing.
It's a lot of fun, actually. We have a major tourism industry growing all around bourbon. Like, you know, wine is to Napa, bourbon is to Louisville and to Kentucky. So it's great for the economy.
I guess so. My partner's the bourbon guy. I get about as close to it as smelling it and go, it's really strong. But maybe I'll take a sip while I'm there.
But you can practice.
I could. Besides bourbon, Louisville's turning into sort of a cycling bonanza town.
Well, we love it. I mean, it's we've got so many different alternatives to cycle here from, you know, we had the World Championship Cyclocross here a little over a year or so ago, which was just a fantastic event. So we got two cyclocross world-class courses. We've got tremendous BMX activity. Our road riding is wonderful. Our extreme park, if you want to count that in terms of skating and all that, is really over the top. And then our newest addition has been this mega cavern. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh, yeah. The builder, Joe Preisel, was a guest on the show right as he broke ground down there to build the mountain bike park.
So it's like there's something for everybody. If you're a serious rider or if you're just a casual rider like me, our Big Four Bridge, which is a pedestrian bridge across the Ohio River now, connects Louisville with southern Indiana, is opening up a lot more miles over there. So it's just been a real renaissance. We've dedicated about 80 miles here in the city to cycling on our roads. We've got east-west connectors. We're putting in north-south bike lanes now as well. So I want you to be able to live in our city without having to own a car. You know, so that could be public transportation. The bike is part of that, obviously. Good pedestrian activity. And it's, you know, obviously it's good for your health and it's good for the environment. So the more we can do, the better.
That sounds good to me. I hope Cleveland's listening. I mean, you know, we're up here and we have some things going on. But, boy, it sounds like you guys are really doing it. So what do you think's making Louisville such a magnet for all these cycling events and venues and all the things that are going on?
Well, we've got the facilities, one. And, you know, two, it didn't cost a lot to do the facilities. So it's more of a mindset, I think, of we're going to go ahead and do these things. And I think almost everybody remembers when they learned how to ride a bike, you know, and probably in your chart, your life, you know, in the first 5 or 6 years, that'd be one of the high points, you know, where it's like, I'm doing this by myself. And so getting on a bike, no matter how old you are, kind of brings that back to you. And we don't approach this as it's just for Lycra clad people. As a matter of fact, some of them are the most dangerous out there, you know, more than cars. So it's like, jump on with whatever clothes you got on and just get out there and spin around. So it could be whether you're commuting or going to a local park or going across the Ohio River, but doesn't need to be fancy. But we've got everybody from, you know, world's, you know, top level cyclists here to, you know, grandma that just got a bike yesterday and is jumping on, and I saw her downtown.
When Don Walker, who owns the Handmade Show and actually lives in Louisville, when he was on the show, he said that you have a mayor's ride. Tell us about your ride.
Yes, it's part of something we call our hike, bike, paddle event. Now, we've added all kinds of things now called hike, bike, paddle, yoga, tai chi, zumba. however we can be active, we have these 2 days a year, and on Memorial Day and Labor Day. And we have around 12,000 people show up. The premier event for that is the bike ride. We close down about 15 miles of roads here in the city, so you can just get out for a nice cruise. It's relatively flat. And so our expert riders, you know, boom, they take off at the beginning and they knock it out in like 45 minutes or so. And then other folks can take 2 or 3 hours and just cruise around it. So what's fun about it is you see the really serious folks, and then you see, you know, literally kids that are five, six years old with their families just going for a nice cruise, but the roads are shut down. So it's nice and safe and a good introductory for cycling. So it's real low maintenance, but it's of the 12,000 people at the hike, bike, paddle, yoga event, probably there'll be 8 to 10 of them go on a bike ride.
That's awesome. Well, and having you participate in it gives everybody else that sense that it's okay to do this.
Well, and I just go on there, jump on with whatever I'm wearing. I try to make it very approachable. I mean, I always have a helmet on, obviously, but I'll just have street clothes on or shorts or something like that. But a good pair of padded shorts is the number one thing. We all know that. And yeah, I said, let's get on and go for a ride. I mean, I'm more like a cruiser, you know, that would average, you know, 10 to 12 miles an hour, because I got to stop a lot and talk to folks and see what's going on with different alleyways. And it's a great way to socialize and get fresh air and get a little exercise in at the same time. So sometimes we'll just make an announcement that, hey, in 2 days, let's meet, you know, at the base of the Big Four Bridge and let's go for a ride. And, you know, there'll be 100 people show up there or different parks in our city. And we've got a great bike club here as well with everything for really beginning riders to expert riders during the summertime. They'll have about 80 to 100 events a week. So it's, we just want to make it accessible. And as you know, the more people that start cycling, then the more it's accommodated, and cars and bikes and pedestrians get along. So we're having fun with it.
I'm speaking with Mayor Greg Fisher from Louisville, Kentucky. He will be hosting NABS this year, NABS 2015. With all these positive things going on, what do you think is the most important cycling issue that Louisville needs to address?
Coexistence. You know, that would be cyclists, cars, and pedestrians. You know, so that we realize when we have a complete street, it's for everybody. You know, it's just not for people in cars or bikes or walkers, because, you know, we're getting to the point now where we got quite a few cyclists, and sometimes, you know, you can have a cyclist attitude toward cars and vice versa, and you don't want the pedestrians kind of caught in the middle as well. So we talk about that a lot. The media covers it, and it's just something that we're saying from my office that, hey, we're going to have a car, we're going to have a city where multi-modes of transportation is a way of the future, and we're moving that way. Sometimes the car drivers, you know, will be critical when we take a lane for bike lane, a dedicated bike lane. We did that with a couple streets last year. But everybody gets used to it. And the important thing is let data drive the decisions. You know, we're not going to take a lane on a heavily trafficked road, but we're going to take one on a side road so people can commute, you know, let's say one or two blocks off the main road. And so that coexistence is probably the biggest issue.
A guy named Chuck Marone, who is a professional engineer, runs an organization called Strong Towns, and he talks about slowing traffic down and narrowing streets back down instead of widening them to also help businesses. Do you see cyclists wanting to go places where there are restaurants and coffee shops and places that they need to be able to park their bikes and be safe?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we call that calming traffic, calm down. You know, so it goes slower. You take streets two ways instead of one ways. And so that people can then see more what's going on the street. It's good for retail and restaurants at the same time. It's good for local businesses. You know, we're in the final stages of having a map that goes to all of our local distilleries, our local craft beers, excuse me. So people want to come and kind of know where to go for that. So there's a lot of fun ways to get around. So no, a lot of times, you know, cities were designed 50 years ago where people could get in them and out of them as fast as possible. You know, so you'd have a lot of one-way streets, and now you see that changing back to two-way streets and calming traffic, and that's a good development. It's safer as well.
So the last thing I want to talk about is your bike share program. Do you have one? You do. You have a small one, I think, right?
We have a small one, and we're getting ready to expand it by about 300 bikes or so. So we're in the final stages of getting our sponsors together for that, and we've been able to learn a lot from other cities at the same time. But that's important for when people come to town. Now, some of the hotels offer bikes as well, so if you're thinking about that, ask your hotel so you can get out and cruise. And there's a lot of several bike shops downtown where you can also rent a bike and get out. But there's a lot to see, and it's relatively easy unless you're hardcore. You know, it's you can stay on relatively flat area. We got some knobs, small mountains that are about a mile away across the river that will give you a super workout. But there's a lot to see and a lot of different alternatives.
Will we see you at the Handmade Show? You're going to make a stop in?
I believe I am. If I'm in town, I'll be there. I'm a big fan of Don Walker. He's been really helpful on our local bike scene. He, Andy Murphy, and a few other folks just put such a good positive face on cycling for the community. You know, super accessible guys, want to share their love. And there's nothing like passion, you know, when you're talking to somebody that kind of spread that in the community. And Don has got that. And I will be supporting him any way I possibly can during the conference.
I hope to see you there. I appreciate you taking time to talk with me this evening. And go for a ride as soon as you can, because it's going to be a while up here.
Okay, well, come on down here. Maybe we can go on one together.
I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mayor Greg Fisher joined me from his office in Louisville, Kentucky. What a nice guy.
That sounds like it'd be really cool to live in a town with him as a mayor.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think that would be fun. And he has, what, 80 kinds of bourbon in his office? It sounds like that was kind of fun.
That's a
too.
Lot of antifreeze.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a lot of great things going on in Louisville that a lot of other towns can pay attention to and try and duplicate.
True that. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be back. We're going to start our news. We've got lots to talk about. And then we'll end up talking with our buddy Rody. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. Are back. It was just a quick break out of Mayor Fisher's interview, which was really interesting. And now we're going to give you the news. What you got?
The UCI to consider extreme weather protocol. The UCI considers the safety of riders as an absolute priority and is therefore taking this issue very seriously. They're currently working with key stakeholders to adopt protocols if a race is affected by extreme temperatures. And this is also something that was brought up by the Association of North American Pro Road Cyclists a couple of weeks ago. They made a proposal also, and it will be a cutoff of 3 degrees Celsius or lower combined with rain or wet snow is something that would be too cold and something that is going to need to be looked at and agreed upon what the situation is. If we watched the Dubai tour, and we've had situations in the past with the Giro d'Italia, you know, snow and cold and rain.
Yeah,
and,
but that's cycling.
It is cycling, but they're actually going to take a look at a certain point where you have to say, okay,
well,
that's
if it's dangerous,
too much.
I could understand. Like, now, as in hypothermia is dangerous. But that's what happened back in the 30s and 40s.
And here's the problem. If they leave it up to the officials, the UCI officials at each race, they may have a different determination or different result in a different way to, do you suspend the race? Do you just not include that stage? I don't know if this is going to make it better or worse.
This is like all of a sudden there are school closings all the time. I don't even remember one when I was a kid, hardly.
Uphill both ways. 20
right.
below zero.
Exactly.
I remember that
no
snowstorm in 1976.
Right, that, exactly.
Yes.
That basically shut down the city.
Right.
But I don't remember schools being closed.
Well,
not like they are now.
We love the children and we care about them.
We coddle them. All right, we're moving on. Can
okay.
we move on?
Please.
Okay. Image of the week. I'm thinking to myself, if I was this mechanic, I would be hiding, throwing the toolbox away, and getting out of town. This comes from the Cycling Central podcast out of Australia, where they, believe it or not, talk about all things cycling. Sound familiar? So it's a beautiful pursuit bike. It's a black pursuit bike. And here is this poor rider on his drop bars with his right foot almost at the very end of the back wheel attached to the crank. The chain has fallen off. The crank has fallen off. And it's like, uh-oh, who tightened that crank? I thought it was you, right? But it is the talk of the internet. I mean, I've seen cranks fall off because you didn't do it right. But come on, this is a race!
That says everything that it needs to say, and I'm sure that picture will be posted in the mechanic's toolbox or somewhere
for the rest of his life
that he's never gonna forget. Or,
right, exactly. Well, I'm telling you, he probably like disappeared.
Two shout outs this week. Good shout outs. And one of them is sticking with the track championships. Kim Geist of U.S. Cycling. She took the bronze medal, which is fantastic.
At the Worlds.
Yes. And then a different shout out, and it's a happy birthday. And I'm sure we'd sing happy birthday. That's the 27th birthday to Jackie Kroll. Congratulations on being there. We're not singing for you, though.
No,
so.
We don't sing. So do you like bike movies, bicycle movies?
Yes, I do.
I mean, everybody talks about things like Breaking Away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, if you have Netflix, it turns out there are 7 or 8 movies, and some of them I have never heard of. And I'll just very quickly go through them. One's called Wajda. It tells the story of an enterprising and rebellious 10-year-old girl in Saudi Arabia. So it's sort of a documentary. It's only available in Canada. It is not available here. The Bicycle Thief, which I did see, 1948. It's kind of a sad and heartbreaking. It's in black and white. It is one of the best movies of all times, says the New Yorker and the Los Angeles Times. It tells the story of Antonio, an impoverished man in post-war Italy who requires a bicycle to do his job, gets the bike, it gets stolen, and the story goes downhill from there. Girl on a Bicycle from 2013 is set in Paris. It's a romantic comedy. It tells the story of Paolo, an Italian tour bus driver who becomes infatuated with a beautiful woman he sees riding past on a bicycle just days after he becomes engaged to his longtime girlfriend. It sounds like a problem to me. If you never saw it, The Triplets of Belleville from 2003, it's a comical French cartoon. It follows the exploits of Madame Souza, her dog Bruno, and an aging eccentric singing trio who set out to save Souza's grandson after he is kidnapped during the Tour de France. It is available in the U.S. We actually have a copy of it. It is so much fun if you've never seen it. Ride the Divide, of course, is the documentary of the longest mountain bike trail, 2,700-mile journey from Banff to the U.S. border, also available in Canada. The Kid with a Bike from 2011 is another French film. The Kid with a Bike centers around a young boy who has recently been abandoned by his father and left to the care of the state. A hairdresser in town takes him under her wing on weekends, and as the two of them ride around town, the boy struggles to come to terms with his situation. The Armstrong Lie, which is the documentary about his post cancer comeback in 2009. We spoke with the producers of that documentary here on the show. And Pee-wee's Big Adventure is now available on Netflix from 1985.
And with the weather being like it is everywhere around the country.
What else are you going to do?
That would be a great
drink
thing.
Drink bourbon and watch movies.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
Good.
Everybody's going to be nice and warm with all of their...
One way or another.
This is from the Daily Texan Online. Austin City Council voted Thursday to accept $200,000 from a Texas Department of Transportation grant for the installation of 12 bicycle signals and bicycle detection equipment at 20 intersections around the city. The City Council will provide an additional $50,000 to the project, which was proposed in 2013. Bicycles are difficult to sense at the intersection because they're smaller and lighter than cars, according
and
to the director.
And often they're not metal.
And now they're not.
Right.
The proposed bicycle detection equipment would involve an app on a cyclist's smartphone, which notifies the traffic light a cyclist is waiting for the light to change. So this is really the cool part of it. Doesn't matter what your bike's made out of. It doesn't matter how big or how heavy. Most people that ride now carry a phone with them. And you would have an app on your phone that would send a signal to the signal.
The signal. The signal will signal the signal.
Go ahead and say, hey, guess what? I'm here. And put it in the queue and then make it change that much more quickly or optimize it for changing,
that's
which is really cool.
App. Now, that's an interesting app.
That's something that we really want to see. Now, in conjunction, well, not in conjunction with that, but along the same lines, rolling through another one of the Indiegogos, I found a campaign called Bike Shield. What Bike Shield is, you get an app on your phone, I get an app on my phone.
And they can go do lunch?
And they can talk to each other.
Uh-huh.
And they can sense where it's at. The idea is using that technology, the more people that have an app like this, if there's an app in a car and there's an app on a bicycle, the proximity sensors can tell you where it's at. So I think this is technology. Well, this isn't going to solve everything. The combination of the two, I think, would work out fabulous. And that's something that we'd love to see put into cars as you're going along. If you put it into a smartphone, everybody doesn't have to have a new car with the latest technology. You can have all of that. So some really cool things as we move forward with all of this stuff, and hopefully it'll make it safer and much better for a ride.
That would be cool. So what do Massachusetts and California have in common?
Oceans.
Very good. That would be one.
Okay.
But it isn't the weather, obviously.
No.
Well, they have weather. Anyway, both states are contemplating mandatory helmet laws.
We talk about this off the air. We talk about it on Twitter, on Facebook,
well,
and all the other.
Well, we talked about it with Richard Fries the last time he was on, and now that he is the new executive director of MassBike, he's, you know, working on that. But mandatory helmet laws almost always result in reduced ridership.
Right.
They do not solve the problems that the people see or think, like the legislators think, that they're going to solve. They do not solve the car bike problem. And in fact, even wearing a helmet at all doesn't matter one way or another in that regard. So ridership almost always goes down when there is a mandatory helmet law. In California, the state senator's name is Carol Liu, L-I-U, and she's the one who has introduced this new bill. And on top of it, she's put a $25 fine if you are caught not riding with a helmet. And I think it's just going to create lots of issues. But again, well, I don't live in California.
And I think one of the best comments that you see is all the people that have accidents in cars, they're not required to wear a helmet,
well,
are they?
Well, there is that. Right.
So
some should.
yes, I think they should. But it just, I'm going to say it doesn't make sense. It doesn't solve the problem.
It does not solve the problem it is intended to solve. That is the issue. Unless, of course, you want fewer people on bicycles.
Right.
Now, if that is your agenda and you're disguising it as everybody needs to wear a helmet because it's safer, that's a different story. And that one, you know, you're not going to prove that by the legislative language.
In a different sport, we have spring training has started for a lot of people, which makes us think about opening day for baseball. Opening day for baseball is always warm. For cycling, not always so much. this is just an update. If you're anywhere near Camp Chase Trail, Rails to Trails Conservancy and the Friends of Camp Chase Trail invite you to celebrate opening day for the trails on Saturday, March 28th. The celebration is held at Camp Chase Trail and Ohio to Erie Trailhead. And if you go to their website or if you go to their
Rails
Facebook page, Rails to Trails, you can get the information and all the other stuff.
March 28th, it's cold.
No, it's not. No, it's going to be sunny. And let's stick with the theme of never mind. It'll be warm.
Okay. From your mouth, you know. Okay. What's the money story of the week?
The money story of the week? The $10 million story? Or the,
the $10 million.
Is that the money story?
That's the money story. This is the only mention we're going to make all week. Lance Armstrong was ordered to repay SCA, the insurance company, $10 million that they paid him in bonuses for lying and cheating.
So, yes, that's a great thing. And
enough said.
Right.
Okay.
And enough said. So,
move on.
So for Twitter follower Lou, we're done talking about Texas dopers.
Okay.
So in the past, we've seen the bike, garage bike parking technology and all of the other stuff in Japan. Mashable on their website finally has the more complete detailed YouTube video, a link that's there that is really cool. If you're interested in technology of any sort.
It's like calling the elevator.
Yes.
You just push the button. The door opens. Your bike goes in. You don't know where it's going. You don't know how it gets there. But this video will show you that. It's very cool. Really
and what
cool.
I like is how detailed it is. And it really goes into all of it. So it's really cool to see.
My last item is actually a request from show owner of NABS, Don Walker. He is looking for, and if you live in the Louisville area or you just want to be in Louisville and help out, he's looking for some volunteers to help with the show this year. You can just contact him at the NABS 2015 website and say, hey, I'll help. You know, he needs help with things like registration and probably bike parking and stuff like that. He's looking for about 100 volunteers.
In the United States, while we're watching a race in Europe or Australia or wherever that is, we always have a little bit of trouble watching on television.
Right.
Or we have to try and chase it somewhere on a stream, and we may even have that issue here in the United States. Well, a listener, Chris from Indiana, sent me a quick note and said that he recently signed up with Dish World. And Dish World is covering many events, and they actually will hold it for 2 or 3 weeks after that you can watch it again if you wish. It's not only going to be live at that point in time. So if that's something that you're interested in, you can go ahead and take a look at that. One last story that I'm going to have, and this is from Texas again. A proposed change would make campus bike theft felony offense. And it's kind of interesting, the route that they take with this. The concept is that for a lot of people who use their bike as a main form of transportation, the value of the object is more than the cost of the object. So a proposed change last year would increase the punishment for stealing a bike that was a primary form of transportation.
How do they know that?
But police opposed the legislation because there would be no way a thief would know if the bike was a primary form of transportation or just a bike. So if it's just a small crime, it's okay. But if it's a big crime, it's different. And it's
the same crime, right?
Very confusing with all of the other things.
It didn't go anywhere.
No.
Okay. Well, then that makes even more sense.
It may roll back around at another time. So.
They always do. On that note, we're going to roll on into a break. And then we're going to come back and we're going to Worcester. Did I say it right that time?
You said it right.
All right. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
Hi, Rody. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me this evening.
Diane, it is a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
We're only 2 weeks out from NABS. I wanted to talk with you because you're one of my panelists on my little frame builders panel. And I want to talk about your work and your thoughts on the bike business. You always have such cool things. You have such a great perspective. I want to start with the fact that you really define yourself more as a custom fabrication company, not just a frame builder. So talk to us a little bit about the projects that interest you and how they're related to cycling. Are they always related to cycling?
Okay. I guess the reason that descriptor fits me more appropriately is because frames are not the only thing I make. And the reason that I step above and beyond that is because I try to think of the bicycle holistically.
And when I meet with a customer and we discuss their needs, their desires, and we create a vision together of what we can fabricate for them as their ultimate one-off piece, oftentimes I'm not thinking of what aftermarket accessories I'm going to put on it. So I like to not only make the frame, but make a complement of accessories like the seat posts and the cranks and the handlebars and stems and everything to fit that vision. So that's a little bit beyond just being a frame builder per se. I'm a dream maker, I guess. That's what I kind of like.
I like that.
You know, let's whirl something together and have it spit out the other end full of color and rainbows and fun.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Are we going to get unicorns too?
You know what? Unicorns are extra.
I'll bet they are. I'll bet they are. So why do you feel that there are options? You know, there are good options. Like, there are nice titanium handlebars out there, but you actually are making them. How long does it take you to do this stuff?
You know what? One of the lessons you learn as a business owner, specifically as a frame builder, is that everything always takes so much longer than you think it will.
That's true.
So, what's interesting about our particular niche, since we're going to be speaking to that in 2 weeks when we have our panel discussion for up-and-coming frame builders and those interested in the trade, is that even within our small niche, there is a wide diversity of how much participation you can place yourself in. You know, one good example, my good friend Carl Strong, incredible fabricator, and he knocks out frame after frame after frame. You know, he does 40 to 50 a year with impeccable craftsmanship. He's on one end of the spectrum. I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I do somewhere between 12 and 20 complete bicycles a year, where I try to fabricate not only the frame, but as many of the pieces, parts that I possibly can. And that's for two reasons. The first is what we spoke to already. You know, holistically, the customer and I come to a vision of where we want this to be. And as part of that, I just don't see throwing on aftermarket pieces. I want them to all be fabricated in that same vein. And so by creating my own handlebars or bar stem combos and the hot rod cranks we make out of titanium and steel and the seat posts, I can adjust the tubing and the diameters and the aesthetic to help match that vision. So for me, selfishly, I really enjoy that. Because it gives me something else to do. And, you know, in a fairly ADD society where, you know, nothing holds your attention for long, it allows me to feed that need for creativity. But for the customer, this is the one and only time they're going to have a chance to have the complete package as well. Many of the items I make, I don't sell independent of a full build. So when we look at what's this bicycle going to become, these are the other things that are available as options to you, and should we embrace them?
You're making a frame, you're making bars, you're making a seat post, you're making stem. We can look at that maybe as the frame set inclusive. And forks, I assume you're making forks.
Oh, yeah, we do. Okay. Titanium forks, steel forks, we do thigh cranks, steel cranks. We've even made our own hubs. You know, we've had to do some modifications on some other things for drivetrain related, specifically for belt drives. We've done some custom six-speed clusters that will fit on a single-speed dishless rear wheel.
Wow.
You know, some kind of cool, fun stuff that makes it unique and to the individual. But, you know, when we talk about the niche of frame building, that's a range, you know, from Carl to me, the numbers he produces down to the more minimal numbers I produce. And your query to how much time does it take, well, it takes a lot of time sometimes. It just depends on how intensive the customer's requests are.
You are not currently taking new orders. At least your website says you're not taking new orders.
Not for full builds, no. I still try to make some handlebars and some cranks available in small numbers, simply because I really like the products and I want people to have an opportunity to have them.
Can you tell us approximately what the wait time is in your queue right now?
Builder's queues, that's an interesting hurdle to work through. Basically, we were getting a lot of requests, and I have a horrible time with telling people no, something my wife reminds me of all the time.
Because behind every good frame builder, there's a woman beating on him, saying, "Hey, hey, hey, pay attention."
Well, it's a partnership, you know.
It is a partnership.
Many times you need more than one set of eyes on a business to be able to keep it steering forward. So we got to a point where we said, you know what, down the road, I want to be able to take some time and do what I want to do above and beyond what I build for other people. So we put a call out and we said, hey, this is it for the next 2 weeks. We're going to be taking, you know, people's names who want to get on the list. After that, we're shutting it off and I'm taking a year off and I'm going to build some things that I want to build for myself. And at that time, we had about 110 people total on the list. And depending on how long each project takes, you know, some bikes I can get done in a week, other ones take a month, depending on how intensive the project becomes. So it's difficult to give a timeline, but I just told those folks, you know what, I'm not asking for a huge deposit or anything like that. I just want your interest. $20 puts your name on the list and takes care of our office time to do so. And be prepared to wait a long time.
So basically what you're doing is you put together enough orders and people were willing to wait for you to work on bikes at the pace you want to work on them and do your other projects. Is that a fair description of what you just said?
I would say so.
Okay.
You know, and what's the thing that never gets talked about from people who have a backlog of work is that the work is always sitting there.
Yes.
And it's never off the shelf. It's always on your shoulders.
Yes, so I am aware of that.
it becomes very burdensome because, you know, I try to focus on the customer at hand at the time and give them 100% of my focus on their project because I know they've been waiting a long time and they've been incredibly patient with me as I feed the other needs of the business as well. But it doesn't take away the stress of knowing that, you know, there's another 60 people on the list yet that I haven't even began to scratch off. So it makes it tough to sit back or relax or allow your focus to wander for very long.
I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Rody Walter. He is the Groovy Guy, Groovy Cycle Works out of, okay, now I said it wrong evidently before. It's Worcester, Ohio?
It is Worcester. That's
okay.
Right.
Okay. I didn't say it right before. I said Worcester. Not being an Ohioan from the beginning, you know.
Well, you know what? The ironic thing is I've lived here for 24 years, Diane, and I'm still not considered from Worcester. So it's just one of those towns.
Yeah, it is. That's true. Actually, are you right in Worcester?
My shop was downtown for a number of years. About 5 years ago, I had a period where I was broken into twice. I had spray paint graffiti on the building every other weekend, and the house that we were living in town, you know, we bought as a starter home 19 years previous, and we had two adults and two teenagers with one bathroom. So we just decided it's time to start over. So we purchased a piece of property just outside of the city limits. We're about 2 miles outside of town, and built a new house and built a new shop and made a new beginning.
Good for you. That's really cool. Can we talk about materials?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So I know certain builders limit themselves to a material. For example, Richard Sachs builds in steel.
Mm-hmm.
You do not do that. You actually have steel and tie and aluminum, and obviously you find a use for and need for all three. So tell us a little bit about your philosophy on materials and your preferences.
One of the things that I strive to do is be an all-around fabricator, to be capable in all the mediums that may prospectively help a client achieve their performance needs. And to do so, you really need to be efficient in the use of the materials that are available out there. Aluminum saw its heyday in the late 90s and has somewhat tapered off since that time, but still is a fantastic material for bicycle frames. Titanium has always been a premier choice for durability, responsiveness, performance. But it takes a whole nother set of skills to be able to work with that in a production environment. And steel is just the nice median in between. It can be high performance, it's solid, it's stable, it's durable, at a better price point than tie many times. So one of my goals as I was learning and evolving as a frame builder was to become as proficient in as many materials as possible so that I can feed the needs of the client. And as for me, you know, it lends a little bit different step to each day, because working with tie is different from working with steel, which is different from working with aluminum. And each one presents their own hurdles to be surmounted, but also have some great performance capabilities attached to those. So it keeps it exciting for me and mixes it up a little bit and gives my prospective clients a little wider buffet to choose from.
Is there a part of the process of designing and building frames that you like more than other parts? Is there something that just grabs you and you can't wait to do it, like grab the torch, for example?
Oh, you know, what's neat about how I build is that I get to touch every aspect of the bicycle's development, from design through machining, welding, painting, assembly, to the handoff. So one of the things I value most is the enrichment that I get from the entire process. No individual aspect, but as a whole. What I enjoy most is going out on a first ride with a customer.
Oh, you do that? That's cool.
When I have the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, it's neat because a lot of these customers have waited a long time for the bike, and I try to share as much throughout the build as we go with them. So there's a certain amount of bonding that goes on, you know, not only with the bicycle, but with me too. And so I'm fortunate that a lot of customers want to come and pick up their completed bike at the shop. We've had some great folks come in from Australia, from England, from all over the States. And it's always a pleasure to take them out for the first ride. Because if you've never had the chance to see an adult giggle and smile like a teenager,
it's,
you know?
It's pretty interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I have.
It's such a joy. And I guess I would have to say that is my most favorite aspect of being a custom bicycle builder.
It's pretty cool.
It is very cool.
It's very cool. Just to see that smile come over their face and they're like, oh my goodness. Because, you know, it's a leap of faith that they take when they plunk down whatever it is to somebody like you. And even though when we had our custom shop, we didn't actually fabricate frames, they trusted that you were going to hand over this amazing machine, which you do. And then you watch them take off on it, and it's just like, holy smokes, there it is. You know, I'm always like nervous and always excited.
Oh, absolutely. It brings validation to what you do every day.
True.
And it makes every day that you're swearing because things don't go the way you think they should,
right,
or as quickly as you think they should. It eases all those away, and you feel young and vibrant again.
You are busy. You are productive. You go to work. You do the job. You're excited about it. You love it. What do you think would be the most difficult thing for somebody who wanted to get into this business today? What do you think they would have the most trouble wrapping their heads around? You know, there's so many young builders all of a sudden, and a lot of that, you know, we owe a lot of that to Don for making the handmade show such an interesting event. But, you know, there are some things that it could be a barrier to people doing well like you do. What do you think those things are?
Don has certainly created an environment of awareness. The hand-built bicycle hadn't really been as celebrated or in the forefront of the customer's attention, I think, until the show came along. It had been steadfast for years at the high performance level. Folks knew that the hand-built bike was the vehicle if you wanted to achieve. But I'll be honest, you know, the mass market bikes are pretty darn good, and there's no reason you have to have a custom bicycle now to be able to enjoy your ride, to perform at an Olympic level or in a Tour de France, or just set your first time trial pace at 20 miles per hour. So the environment of the business has changed substantially in the last 20 years that I've been involved in it. Hurdles today really, I think, come back to something I've written about quite a bit on the blog, because these same questions get asked by the new builders, and that is understanding good fundamentals of business. We like to talk about the fancy paint jobs and watching a customer ride their first bike and the money that can be made, you know, and how you feel validated by making it with your hands. But the truth of the matter is, fabrication is probably about 15% of the work that you do as a frame builder. And if you are deficient in the fundamentals of business, you're not going to last. And that's what makes it tough, because we have a vehicle like the North American Hand-Built Bicycle Show that gives exposure to new builders, but we don't often take the time to make sure they're equipped to take that exposure, build a solid base that's going to offer long-standing, you know, business relationships. So first and foremost, you need to know your business fundamentals. Have a business plan. Know what your expenses are to build a frame. Charge accordingly. You know, have appropriate insurance. All these things factor into just the basics of business. And then secondly, I think a lot of young builders have a hard time creating an individual identity. And part of that comes with knowing that you're not selling a bicycle. You're selling yourself. You know, people come to me because they see the work that I do. They may be attracted at first by that work, but they get to know me as a builder. They get to know me as a person, and they want to have a relationship with me. Now, that relationship ends up in a bike rather than a kid, which is pretty cool. But those bikes are like my kids, you know. It makes me happy to see them out there and playing and having fun. But if you don't have the ability to recognize that you are the product and are able to vigorously sell that product by being good to your customers, by valuing those relationships, by stepping forth and doing more than you think is necessary, your business isn't going to last.
Outstanding words. Outstanding. It was one of the reasons that I asked you to be one of the participants, because I knew how you felt about it. And people don't understand, you still have to, the word profit is not a dirty word. You have to be able to stay in business.
Absolutely. You know, and that's something that I think a lot of folks in my generation have a difficult time with, is that oftentimes we do work because we love it. But you have to understand that the work is only sustainable if it sustains you. So why should my plumber charge $80 an hour and I feel guilty about charging what I do?
Exactly.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, because the set of skills that is required, not that I'm denigrating plumbers by any means, but the set of skills that is required to complete the design process, fabrication, finish work, assembly, and have it all work is encompassing. And that has value. And you have to get to a point where you, as the builder, understand that your product, who you are, the education you have, the experience that goes into that, has value. And you need to stand up and ask for that. Because if you don't recognize the value, neither will the customer.
People tend to overlook something that has no value. It's like saying something's free. People are less likely to show up for free than they are if they've paid money for it.
I don't know. If you told them that they were going to get 80 kinds of free bourbon at NABS in 2 weeks,
that's
you might get quite the turnout.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's a turnout. Well, maybe. It would be fun. It would be fun. So let's talk about NABS for a second. What are you going to be showing at NABS?
The big item that we're bringing is a culmination of about 7 years of work. Myself and my mentor, Bill Grove, the guy who got me started with this sickness years and years ago, turned our eyes towards developing a frame fixture that we wanted, something that was for the professional level builder that offered greater accuracy, repeatability, and access during the fabrication process than what was commercially available. We built the first two prototypes about 5 years ago, which I've been using and refining since that time, with the goal of getting it out there. But like anything else, what did I say? It takes longer than you anticipate it to.
Always.
and more money. It takes more money, too.
Always.
But we're finally at the point where I said, you know what? We've got to get this thing done. We can keep making revisions. You know, every time a bottom bracket or a rear hub spacing standard changes, you know, we'll just move with it.
Or headset.
Right. So one of the things I'm very excited about is bringing the AccuSet fixture to the show. We've invested a significant amount of time and money. We're going to have 12 of them boxed up and ready to ship. We have a number of people, fellow builders, who are looking for something that offers a, offers the design elements that we've included in this fixture. So we're going to have two of them there, one on a stand that rolls around, the other that is a bench mount or fixed position for people to try out. Everything about the fixture is set off of engineered numbers. So there's no linear scales where you take a little arrow and try to line it up on the right number to find out if you're at 72 degrees or not. Everything has been designed so that it functions with digital calipers. So you set digital calipers on set points. You turn a quarter-inch screw that basically turns a machined all-thread through the fixture, and it automatically adjusts that. And when you get to the thousandth number that's indicated on the chart for that angle, you stop and lock it down.
Wow.
So what it allows you to do is accurately set up a set of dimensions, like a 3D blueprint, cut your tubes, put those tubes away in a box. A year later, come back, you can put it right back to the same dimensions, and it'll be spot on. For the custom frame builder, like myself, I have numerous repeat customers that say, you know what, I love what you did last time on another bike, but this time I want the aesthetic to be different, or I'd like to do it in titanium instead of steel. I can pull out their old numbers, set that fixture right back up, and know that it's exactly where it was the first time I made it. For the small production house who's doing runs of frames with pre-determined sizing, you know, they can set this fixture up, do the run of 18-inch frames, break it down, do the run of 58-centimeter road bike frames, and know that every single time it's the exact same dimensions. No room for wobble or wiggle or whatnot. So pretty excited about that.
It sounds like it's exciting. You bringing any bikes?
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the bikes that I'm excited to bring has been one of these intensive long projects.
Yes.
I have a customer who is an avid surfer, and he wanted a all-titanium surfboard-carrying bike to get him to the beach. So this is a cruiser-styled titanium bike. It's got all the woody accents that one would expect, you know, for something from the 60s surf era.
Nice.
And it will carry surfboards on its titanium rack. So pretty stoked on that. It's got a lot of personalized touches just for him, and he is coming into the show to pick it up there. So it's always nice to have a client show up and see other people adore their creation.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that is just really cool. I'm looking forward to seeing you. I will see you in 2 weeks. Thanks so much for being a guest on the show this evening. It is always fascinating to talk with you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Diane.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Rody Walter, Groovy Cycle Works, Worcester, Ohio.
There's so many things I'd love to say about this. This is just a fabulous conversation because so many people need to understand everything that he talked about business.
Even the plumber.
Even the plumber. Right. And that's a pretty cheap plumber. But for me, besides all the great business advice and the takeaway is, why is it that people are willing to spend a whole bunch of money on something that's put together in some little country by little kids somewhere, and they put an I in front of it, and people stand in line to buy it, whether it's a phone or a TV or whatever. Yet when you have something that's artistic, in a sense, why is it that that's not to be understood? This is a must listen to for anyone who's getting involved in any kind of business, let alone the cycle industry.
Well, I really enjoy talking with him, and I'm looking forward to seeing him. He's a lot of fun, and he's smart as a whip.
Yes.
All right, on that note, we are going to skedaddle out of here. If you are any place warm, I hope you get a chance to go for a ride. If not, stay warm. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow The Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.